Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Joining us this week is Lucy Lang, the Inspector General of New York. She's the 11th Inspector General of New York. We'll start with welcome to the Capital Connection, Inspector General Lucy Lang.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Now, I have your bio. I have it here, and I could read that, and I would be boring at it. Why don't you just, for our listeners who are meeting you for the first time across the state, at least on this program, tell us a little bit about yourself. How does your journey end up in the Inspector General's office in New York?
Well, I'm a lifelong New Yorker, David. I'm raising my family, two young children in New York City, and my parents live nearby in Columbia County, where I'm fortunate to spend a great deal of time. So I experienced a tragedy when I was in college, which was that a childhood friend of mine was murdered by her brother. And as I watched this unfold in the months and years after that tragedy, I saw the criminal justice system both working for and against the victim's family, who happened also to be the family of the perpetrator of the crime. And it was that that led me ultimately to become a prosecutor in Manhattan, where I worked prosecuting homicides, domestic violence, and gun violence. And in that job, I started to realize that I was only seeing one side of the system, which led me to build a college and prison program that I taught for a number of years in New York State's prisons, and started to see the system from multiple sides. And I'm really fortunate now to be serving as Inspector General and to be really committed to doing the on-the-ground work of connecting with New Yorkers, especially vulnerable New Yorkers, and trying to make sure that the systems designed to serve them are doing just that with the most integrity possible.
We are speaking to Inspector General Lucy Lang of New York. The issue of workers' compensation. I know you've just released a report, and this is among the Department of Correctional Services, a big area that you overlook in the Inspector General's office. What can you tell us about the report?
I spent the past year, or the first year of my tenure as Inspector General, visiting every prison in the state. And as I visited prisons, I spoke to incarcerated people, to administrators, and to staff to try to identify common threads of challenges that they were facing. And this is, of course, a system that has upwards of 30,000 New Yorkers in custody and that employs huge numbers of very committed public servants. One thing that I learned during these visits was that a number of the facilities were significantly understaffed, and that was coming at a great cost, both to the incarcerated populations who were finding that the programs that they needed were limited, and to the staff who were being forced to do mandatory overtime to make up for the fact that other colleagues were out on workers' compensation. So we did an analysis and saw that the volume of corrections officers who were taking advantage of the workers' compensation system seemed inconsistent with those of other agents, other similarly situated agencies. And so we simply audited those, looked at the cases that have come in to us alleging egregious instances of workers' compensation fraud in the Department of Corrections, and aggregated that information to provide it to the folks who are currently renegotiating the contract.
Well, let's turn to something a little different. The jurisdiction that you cover as Inspector General includes state-funded infrastructure investments and projects as well. And we're just seeing, I noticed, the Buffalo Bills groundbreaking out in Western New York. Governor Kathy Hochul is there, of course. Do you, or have you, as part of your responsibilities, looked at that deal? Was that something that you had to look at?
We do oversee major infrastructure projects, including the Javits Center and the Moynihan Train Hall and others. And it really depends what the provisions of a particular contract are and who the relevant agencies involved in the contract process are, whether or not we take a very active role. So it's something that we look at on a case-by-case basis, which we'll do in this case.
I was looking at your website, which, of course, if anybody wants to go to it, it's ig.ny.gov, and learn more about the Inspector General. One of the things that you said is you want to start promoting the Inspector General's office. A lot of people don't know about the Inspector General and that there's position in New York. And besides coming on a statewide program like this, how else are you getting out the word about what you do? Because people can reach out to your office with complaints, right?
There are two critical reasons that I want to be talking to you all the time and other folks folks like you who are doing the work of communicating with the public. The first is, of course, that it's critical to government transparency and integrity that people who see wrongdoing report it. And folks can do that by reaching us at 1-800-DO-RIGHT. They can do it through our website, our online complaint form at ig.ny.gov, and they can do it through our social media channels, which are at New York State IG on Twitter and Instagram. And we welcome complaints from the public in all those areas. But the other piece, of course, is that I think it is just vital that young New Yorkers see what a career in public service looks like and that they see that there are opportunities for them to serve. And I think that's particularly true for young women. So I'm really thrilled that this week actually marks the beginning of an expanded internship program at the IG's office. We've welcomed 17 interns to our 7 offices across the state. They're a diverse range of young people who are interested in the work of government integrity, and we're excited to be a part of breeding the next generation of public servants.
Well, you said complaints, and, you know, people love to complain. Is there a boundary here? I mean, your office has got to field so many complaints, and you have to weed out the ones that may not be system-wide, right? Ones that are might be individual, maybe they don't rise to the level of your office investigate. How does that all filter out?
I'm so glad that you asked, because it's an area that we've been really focused on over the course of the past 18 months. We receive upwards of 5,000 complaints a year, and that number is growing. And with each complaint that comes in, we have really worked to first, of course, identify if there's criminal wrongdoing or fraud or something that we need to pursue as a complete investigation. We do that, and that is our real area of expertise. But many of them are people who have been to other state agencies, have complained to other sources, and feel that they're not getting adequate information. So we have undertaken a trauma-informed training for all of our staff, particularly those who are interfacing with the public, who are trained in how to respond to folks who are experiencing traumatic incidents and to help guide them towards other resources. So even on the cases where we think we are not the appropriate authority to be responding, we try to make sure to direct people to the right place.
Can you put a face on this? Obviously, you can't give us names or anything, but give us an example of a complaint that might come in that your office would act on.
Well, we receive many complaints related to the Department of Corrections. We receive those complaints from corrections officers and staff and from families of incarcerated people. And in all of those cases, we assess whether they fall under our purview. And in particular, when we identify a kind of system-wide problem, that's when we start to delve in. And so you may recall that we issued a report last year about faulty drug testing that was brought to our attention both by corrections officers and
And it's called
staff.
Microgenics.
And that was the name of the vendor.
Okay.
Who was supplying the testing strips that were indicating the presence of narcotics in the urinalyses of incarcerated folks when they had not ingested any illegal drugs. And DOCS was, in response to that test, administering discipline. So that's an area where when you see a number of complaints come in that we start to say there's clearly something going on here that requires a response.
Yeah, but beyond that, you are looking at more than just DOCS, right? I mean, you're not just looking at the Department of Corrections. I even printed from your website here under New York State Executive Law, Article 4A, the Inspector General has jurisdiction over all executive branch agencies, departments, divisions, officers, boards, and commissions, and over most public authorities and public benefit corporations. The functions and responsibilities include receiving and investigating complaints, as we talked about, concerning allegations of corruption, fraud, criminal activity, conflicts of interest, or abuse in any entity under the Inspector General's jurisdiction, which of course includes the executive, the governor's office, and you have to watch that office. And there's always questions. There were questions about the last Inspector General, maybe too cozy with the governor, let's say, or not tough enough. But beyond that example, how do you look at your role here? Do you have the spine, if you need to investigate the governor if it comes to that?
Absolutely. And I was very clear when I was approached that I would only serve as Inspector General if I was given the full ability to do it independently. And I'm very fortunate that I have not experienced any meddling from the executive chamber, that my staff is able to pursue all of our investigations to their full conclusion. And one major distinction between me and prior Inspectors General is that I don't sit as a member of the governor's cabinet. From the very beginning, we agreed that that was not only important for there to be an actual firewall between us, but also for people to have confidence that there was a firewall between us. So not being a member of the cabinet is a very important feature of this administration. And I think that there is almost no point in having a watchdog who is in any way beholden to their appointing authority. And for what it's worth, you know, I serve for the duration of the term of the appointing governor, which does mean that I'm not subject to the political whims of that governor because I'm here as long as the governor is.
We're speaking with Lucy Lang. She is the Inspector General of the State of New York. According to your own words, you're trying to reimagine the office as being concerned with systemic reform rather than gotcha headlines. And your very kind staff member, David King, wrote just that to me, that you are prioritizing investigating fraud cases that come about due to greed rather than need. What does that mean?
So in addition to my hat as New York State Inspector General, I serve as the Welfare Fraud Inspector General, and we get plenty of cases that come through our doors in which folks have committed instances of welfare fraud. And some of these cases are really tragically sad cases where folks are in need of food stamps and abuse the system in one way or another. And of course, in those cases, we make sure that the conduct stops. But the cases that we are most concerned with are ones where folks are getting huge amounts of windfall out of the welfare system that they're not entitled to, and cases where they are committing identity theft and abusing the benefits that other New Yorkers are rightfully entitled to. So those are really the kind of cases where we, as we say, prioritize pursuing the greedy rather than the needy.
Can you give us a sense of the fraud that's going on there? I mean, we always hear this in political arguments. You know, they're taking advantage of the public welfare system. They don't deserve it. They need to work harder to get it. Those kinds of things come out in political debates and discussions. But what is the true sense of any kind of fraud that's really going on in that system?
In our experience, the level of fraud is much smaller than the scale of need. And so there's no question that it is a necessary system to support needy New Yorkers.
And how do you, the reason for your position is with human beings, you aren't really going to eliminate bad behavior, are you?
Well, that's an awfully big philosophical question.
Well,
David,
you have a position to take care of it, right?
Indeed we do. And so we do our very best not just to be reactive to instances of bad conduct and to make sure that people are held accountable when they commit fraud, but also to seek preventative measures. So when we identify what appears to be an area of regulation in which there's big opportunity for fraud, where we work closely with the system to try to close that hole, because we all would prefer that the system operate with integrity from the jump rather than having to be reactive.
The other area that I wanted to talk to you about here, and we're speaking with Lucy Lang, the New York State Inspector General, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to speak to our listeners across New York today, and that is how the state handles domestic violence among employees and the resources that it offers. You've done an investigation on this. What did you find out?
This was a truly tragic case in which there was ongoing domestic violence between a husband and wife here near Albany. And this was a particularly meaningful investigation to me, having served as a domestic violence prosecutor and responded many times to the scenes of very violent domestic incidents. And what happened here is that the employees, both of whom were state workers, were involved in an abusive relationship in which the husband was abusing the wife. And the wife was documenting it on her work phone because he was monitoring her personal phone. And the long and the short of it is that when the violence came to light with her supervisors, they did not take the steps that had been put in place to try to provide her with the resources she needed. And tragically, he murdered her and killed himself sometime after that the abuse was made known to her superiors. And so it was a really devastating example of how regulation alone can't prevent tragedy. And what's required is training in order to implement those regulations. So we worked very closely with the Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence to make sure that all state agencies are aware of the resources available to people who are suffering. And so I counsel any New Yorkers who are experiencing domestic violence to seek out the resources of the Office for the Prevention of Domestic Violence, because there are resources available and no one should have to live in fear in their home.
Question about it. We're speaking with Lucy Lang. She is the Inspector General of the State of New York. You have on your website a place where you can read your investigative reports. I see another one here. I'd love to hear about it. Racial disparity in the issuance of disciplinary misbehavior reports to incarcerated individuals.
Well, this was prompted by reporting in 2015 from the New York Times that found that incarcerated Black New Yorkers were more likely to be subject to discipline than incarcerated white New Yorkers. And so our office over a period of years looked at those numbers and found that despite efforts DOCS was taking to reduce those disparities, that they were unfortunately still persistent. So we publicized those numbers and have been working with DOCS to implement protocols to end the racial disparities in the administration of prison discipline. That said, that is a drop in the bucket of the racial disparities that are experienced by New Yorkers in the prison system, and actually that pre-exist the prison system, that permeate the criminal justice system from the from policing through release.
What's the recidivism rate at this point? Do we know what it is?
Recidivism, in my view, is not the best measure of success of a system, because if a person is released from prison and does not reestablish ties with their family, is unemployed, and spends the rest of their days living in despair, but is never arrested again, that is not a successful outcome of the criminal justice system. So I think we need to reevaluate the metrics by which we consider success. And I think that it is almost universally agreed that we are not having successful outcomes, and that that's an area for dramatic change that I believe is possible in my lifetime.
Certainly sounds like new thinking, for sure. And I know you've worked under icons, D.A. Morgenthau, right? You ran against D.A. Bragg, who is now the D.A. of New York. How did that form your initial experience and what you're doing now?
Well, Robert Morgenthau, who hired me at the district attorney's office right out of law school, was, of course, a lion in the field of criminal justice. But I think particularly about the work that he and I did in writing what ended up being the last op-ed of his career, which was at a time when ICE was raiding courthouses and picking up immigrants who were showing up for court hearings, and it was having a chilling effect on people reporting crime, et cetera. And so the boss was, as he was known by everyone who worked under him, he was 98 years old. I knew that he cared deeply about this issue, and I reached out to him. He was then working at a law firm, and I said, "Boss, I have a bee in my bonnet about this. Let's write something." And so we wrote an op-ed that called for the prevention of ICE being permitted into courthouses, which ultimately was made law, and that I consider to be a great victory. And so he is really an example of a person who always used his position thoughtfully to the benefit of people who needed it most.
I know it'll seem redundant, but tell our listeners what ICE is and what they were trying to do in the courtroom.
The Office of Customs and Immigration Enforcement would stake out outside courthouses across New York State and look for people who were illegally in the country, who were entering the courthouses. And that had an effect, of course, if people had been arrested and were coming in to deal with their court matters. But it also had a chilling effect on people who were victims. So if a person had been, was, for example, illegally in the country and experiencing domestic violence, they might be far less likely to report that and to seek help because they were afraid of being picked up by the authorities when they responded to the courthouse or to the DA's office.
It also had a chilling effect on the census.
Yes.
At the time, right?
Exactly right.
Because we were trying to count the number of people, and we need to know every citizen, no matter whether they're legal or illegal.
That's exactly right. And it is the census is a great example of how it really matters that people trust government just so the government even knows that they're here. Because we can't administer to folks who aren't somehow accounted for. But of course, we can't account for people if we are going to put them at risk by doing that.
Yeah. Do you have any comment on the current investigations going on right now with D.A. Bragg? You know, we have the president of the United States involved in many investigations, including that one I just mentioned. And of course, with the state attorney general, Letitia James, who I'm sure you interact with.
I think that the Manhattan District Attorney is one of the most important roles in criminal justice in this country. And I am rooting for the District Attorney's success in the long term with respect to implementing the criminal justice reforms that are overdue and with respect to ensuring that people are held accountable and that no one's above the law.
Do you ever cooperate with any other folks in government? I'm thinking of the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli. It seems like you have some areas financially, at least when I looked at some of the, you know, somebody embezzled some money from an area in the state. And DiNapoli does these kinds of investigations as well. So do you cross over each other or do you speak to one another on these issues?
We're very careful to make sure that we are good stewards of the public trust and public funds that it costs to run all the agencies, which means that we make sure that we are not working at cross purposes or that we are doubling down on areas. But we do collaborate with the comptroller, with the attorney general, and with state and local and federal law enforcement in virtually all of our matters, because the silos is what leads to the waste of resources so often.
Yeah, you have to communicate so you know each other's doing. Well, and do you communicate, for example, do you talk to the governor on a regular basis? Andrea Stewart-Cousins of the state Senate or Carl Hastie of the Assembly, do you deal with the leadership or other agency heads?
I deal with the agency heads of the agencies under our jurisdiction. I don't deal with the political parties. I think that now more than ever, the Inspector General's office has to be doing the nonpartisan work of making sure that there are integrity in the agencies we oversee and the authorities that do business with the state, et cetera. So I don't have contact with those, with the legislature or with the governor, and that's very much by design.
You wrote a children's book.
I did indeed.
And we're speaking to the State Inspector General, Lucy Lang, on the Capitol Connection this week. I'm David Gustina, and it's called March On. Tell us what it's about.
My sister is an illustrator and arts educator here in Columbia County and actually just opened a kids' education space in downtown Kinderhook called Super Stories at the Rock Shop. And she and I had long talked about collaborating on something that brought together her artistic skills and my legal and social interests. And so on the eve of the centennial of women's suffrage, we decided, at the time my children were, I think, 2 and 3, and we decided that we needed to tell the story of suffrage in a way that was really simple and memorable for little kids. And it was also a time of women's marches across the country in response to a variety of political setbacks. So we wanted to link the history and legacy of women's suffrage over the centuries. So we wrote a short children's book that she illustrated in rhyme that I hope can impart to young kids the importance of civic activism and how far we've come and how far we have to go on issues of equity.
Yeah, on October 23rd, 1915, over 25,000 women marched up Fifth Avenue in New York City to advocate for women's suffrage. At that point, the fight had been going on for more than 65 years. That is really just something to think about for a moment. And now, as you sit here, Inspector General Lucy Lang of New York, as a woman, did you ever think you'd see the day Roe v. Wade would be overturned?
I certainly didn't. And I have spoken before about the fact that I wouldn't be Inspector General now, I think, but for access to a safe abortion at a very early stage in my career that enabled me to go on to pursue a career, to have children at a time when I was ready to do that. And so I think that the work that New York is doing to protect women's right to choose and women's health care has never been more important. And I'm proud to be a New Yorker that we are continuing to do that work.
What does the future look like for you? You have run for office once. Any plans for a future run beyond the Inspector General's office, or are you just focused on right now?
I have no plans to run for a future office. It is an incredibly humbling and gratifying experience to run for office, but it's hard on everyone. Mm. And I feel so lucky right now to be in a position to have really tremendous impact on the issues I care about, on the health and well-being of New Yorkers, on issues related to New Yorkers who are in custody, both adults and young people, on issues like domestic violence, and on, as I've said, on building trust in and participation in the fabric of our institutions. So I'm so glad to be a member of the Inspector General community. I have gotten to know Inspectors General from across the country who are doing similar work to ours, and that's been really eye-opening.
And they're on the state and federal level, right?
There are Inspector Generals at all kinds of different places. For example, here in New York, the MTA has their own Inspector General. And there are federal inspectors general who oversee the Department of Defense, for example. But ours, like some other state IGs, has this very broad-ranging mandate to root out fraud and corruption in all of the state agencies and authorities that don't have their own internal inspector general.
That's one heck of a mandate. So now as you go forward, what else will you be focusing on? Do you have other things now coming down the pipeline that you're going to be looking at that you can tell us about?
Like so many of these agencies, we have to be doing the daily churn of the work of the office at the same time that we are trying to think longer term. So we are working really hard to make sure that the churn is, as I said, meeting people and addressing their needs, whether or not those cases ultimately turn into anything under our purview. So thinking about the trauma that people experience in interacting with government is really very much top of mind. And then from a big picture standpoint, I expect that you will see more from us related to the large institutions that we work with, including the Office of Children and Family Services, the Department of Corrections, and of course, with the welfare and workers' compensation system.
I can't help myself. I'm so sorry. I just have to say it. And that is, people will not know, but they will know when I tell them that your father is Stephen Lang, the well-known actor who is an avatar right now, and who, as you and I spoke before the program, is such a sweet, decent human being that he even accepted one of my students from UAlbany when they asked to do an interview with him and brought them to your family home in Columbia County, right?
That's right.
And what a wonderful thing. What's it like having a top-rated actor out there as a father?
Thank you. You know, people have always asked me, what is it like to have a dad as an actor? And I think, well, I say it would be weird to me to have had a dad who got up every morning, put on a tie, and went to work. So it's all that I know. And my family are all very artistically minded, and I think that creativity comes in many different forms. And while I am not a painter or a poet, I certainly do like to think his creativity, my mother's creativity, all of my siblings' creativity in some ways has impacted me and enabled me to think creatively about the work of government and how we can communicate and reach out to people who need government support.
And it's a creative act, right? It's a social construction. We create that through our mutual effort.
I think that that's exactly right. And the same is absolutely true for journalism. And so I'm, of course, not surprised that my dad responded positively to your student. And I think that he and I share a commitment to welcoming students and to teaching and inspiring people to do the good work of civic participation, whether that be as an artist, an actor, or as an inspector general.
What a pleasure to have spent this half an hour with Lucy Lang, the Inspector General of New York State. And I hope you'll accept my invitation to come back for another conversation in the future on the Capital Connection.
You're going to be sick of me by the time we're done. I guarantee it. And I hope that listeners will follow us on social media at New York State IG and will report any indicia of fraud, corruption, or abuse in state government to us at ig.ny.gov. Thank you so much for having me on. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Inspector General Lucy Lang.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. Look for program number 2323. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.